reminder, today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may proceed.
Okay, thank you. So I guess we'll just recap with roll call. Barry Cobb, myself, and I also heard James, Mikey, Marika, Glenn, and Margie. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, great. All right, well, we'll go ahead and kind of get started here, kind of reuniting since we last met before the previous week's conference call for the RAP group. I put together a rough outline. I didn't send anything out. I'll just review that real quick, and then we'll kind of just open up the floor. I figured first we'd talk about any general thoughts coming out of the last call for the overall working group. There's a couple of questions that I have in there that we can talk about. The second item, I'd like to review some of Greg's summary comments coming out of the call. Basically, he summarized it as short-term actions for our sub-team and long-term actions relative to the data and how we're going to publish our findings, et cetera. As well as I'd also like to loop into this some of the discussion that was on the list this past week as well from Rod, James, and Greg. Third item is just kind of talk about our next meeting and meeting frequencies, kind of depending on what we figure out what we're going to do from this point. We've got ICANN to dance around. And then lastly, just talk about if we anticipate any SOL exposure for any of the sub-team efforts up to this point. And then at the end, definitely open it up to anything else in terms of agenda items. Does anybody have anything that they'd like to add specifically?
No, I think that covers it. This is James. I was just curious as to who on the sub-team will be in attendance in SOL.
I'm personally will be remote, just attending remotely. I think Rodenbaugh is going, and I don't know about anybody else.
I'll be in attendance.
And Mikey, are you going to just attend remotely?
Yeah, Seoul is not one of my favorite towns. So. I was going to go to Nairobi, but they've got a drought on over there. I'm going to skip that one too. But I'm going to visit Glenn in Geneva.
Sure.
Are you?
Oh, no, it's in Brussels, isn't it? Are you in
Brussels? Yes, Brussels.
Yeah. I'm going to visit you.
Good.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to that one. Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and in terms of, since we're talking about Seoul, so I'm imagining that probably not much of the sub-team's work will pop up in Seoul other than maybe just a quick review item for the meeting that they have scheduled down there. So I don't think we have to worry about too much in terms of preparedness or exposure in that regard. All right, so let's go ahead and move forward. So I guess kind of the first thing was comments and discussion around what we had at the RAP call last Monday, was it, or Tuesday? I can't remember which day. And a couple of questions that I had to kind of just start things off is, you know, given the discussion about the findings that we presented so far and our next steps, in terms of the material that we have, you know, do we still want to consider this material worth publishing in the overall report? And if we do, then what do we need to shore that up? There is probably a considerable amount of effort to do such. Do we get the right bang for the buck, so to speak? And another question I had, which I thought was kind of interesting coming out of the call, was I wasn't aware that it, in terms of publicly available agreements and those kinds of things, I thought that was a requirement that registrars made that information available, but I guess it's not. It's more a customer service aspect. And so that, I thought that was interesting as well. So for this little item, I'll open it up to anybody's thoughts or comments, and then we'll kind of take it from there, and then we'll move into our short-term and long-term action items.
Barry, this is James. If I could chime in on that.
Please, go for it.
Yep. Okay, and this also kind of touches on some of the other items that you had listed on your agenda for us to do today. And that is, you know, what do we foresee, if we could, you know, look ahead, what do we envision being the outcome of this effort? And I was thinking about this over the weekend a little bit, especially in light of Rod Rasmussen's description of what, you know, what this might, you know, where this road might take us in terms of work and studies and things like that. So what I was thinking about was, if we are of the opinion, and I am, but I don't know if this is a widely shared opinion, but if we are of the opinion that registrars should have sufficient leverage or latitude within their registration agreements to address abuse where they see it. But we recognize that that's going to differ based on jurisdiction. It's going to differ based on what sort of market they're going after and whether they're targeting a retail or versus a reseller environment, et cetera. Then it sort of, in some respects, it sort of starts to take policy and compliance off the table a little bit, because it does push back to say that this is a case-by-case, situational type of area where we need to trust the discretion of the registrars. Now, that also kind of goes back to what Mikey was saying earlier about having a minimum baseline of, a least common denominator type of threshold that has to be present in all cases. I'm just not sure we're in a position, without undertaking the studies that Rob described, I'm just not sure we're in a position to make recommendations on what specifically those minimums should be. So I guess I'm just struggling with, do we pull back on the reins a little bit and say, we want to make a recommendation or even a requirement that registrars include anti-abuse measures, you know, we can even list the different types of measures in their registration agreements, and that they have their clients, their registered name holders, agree to those restrictions and leave it at that? Or do we actually want to dive in and develop a recipe of what those restrictions and provisions should look like, recognizing that we're now crossing jurisdictional and market boundaries a little bit? So I just wanted to put that out for discussion.
This is Mikey. Let me add on to that, because maybe that's a way forward, and that is, what if we did the first half right now and said, we think it's a good idea for registrars to include these sorts of things in their agreements, and then wait on the second half until we've got the rest of the work of the task force. One in the afternoon, sorry. The rest of the work group's work done to inform us about some of the specifics. Because it might be that coming out of the other parts of the work group, there could be some specifics that would be helpful in the Rasmussen context. Or there might not. And since we're not really at the point right now of knowing what those are, maybe we just stop at your level right now, James, at sort of level one, and then hold open the possibility of circling back towards the end of the process and inserting a few specifics if we can see the value of those.
I see, this is James again, I see where those would probably align fairly well. You know, I'm not a PMP, Mike, but in the projects that I manage, I call that intelligent deferral, which is not it differs from procrastination in that you say something to the effect of, you're banking on the idea that you're going to be smarter 6 months from now than you are at this moment in time, and that it might be folly to try and come up with specifics now when there's, more stones to be uncovered down the road.
Yeah, I think that's really what I'm headed for is, we could do an awful lot of work and just simply be in front of the rest of the working group. Or we could be, I generally just call this being lazy myself. And, kind of let the rest of the body kind of catch up with us rather than trying to push a rope. But, I think that would be a fine outcome for this stage. I think we've got two, if we did that, I think we've got two pretty useful things for the report. A, yep, there's diversity. And B, we think it might be a useful thing to have registrars come up with some sort of language about abuse in their agreements, and C, we may come back with some specifics once the rest of the work of the task force or the working group is done. That works for me. Barry, how do you feel about that? You're doing the heavy lifting. You don't get to not talk. Sorry.
I still kind of lean to my inexperience of the industry somewhat, but having understood what I know up to this point, I from a textbook perspective, uniformity is an absolute must, but the reality side of me tells me that it just doesn't bias a whole lot, especially if we get into the areas of specific types of abuses. And I think that just really, the reality tells me that just isn't going to be plausible to do, because having reviewed some agreements, I see how they kind of take the general language approach that kind of allows for more broader control powers to act against certain abuses, versus some that have tried to list it specifically for example, spam or some of those things, but they still haven't really bought as much from the industry. So getting into some of the details or specifics around uniformity, I just don't see that happening if we decided to, if what the outcome of all of this was for us to create a recommendation that, yes, there should be this baseline, and this baseline has these types of abuses listed, that limits to those types of abuses only, and we would have to update it every time a new abuse comes around the corner. So I don't think that's a good practice. So we need to find some sort of general language that covers all kinds of abuses that still gives the proper authority to respond to those abuses without being sued left and right. And so what that balance is, I don't know.
Margie, are you still on the call? I bet she's multitasking if she is.
Yeah, I'm on the call.
Way to go. Way to get off mute in a hurry. I've got a question for you. There's a new thing that just floated by on one of the 86 lists that I'm subscribed to that talks about kind of an emergency registry takedown, registry action thing. It just came to...
Yeah, I saw the email as well.
Is that a model that we could you fill us in a little bit on how that works, and B, is that a model that we might be able to take a look at here?
Well, sure. I'm not that familiar with it, but I can tell you what I know. In response to that conflictor worm, my understanding is that there was a lot of very quick action that needed to be taken by the registry. And so, and some of the registries were uncomfortable because they were wondering how it affected their contract. And so they worked out this process with ICANN when something like that happens, like they pre-register domain names or whatever is the action. I don't recall exactly what the action was. That they could get this. Basically, it's a waiver from ICANN saying that, look, ICANN's not going to hold you responsible if that action somehow violates the registry agreements, you're off the hook, you know, because you're cooperating in this manner. And I don't know more than that, but that's the theory behind it. What we could do, if it's useful, and Marika, I think this might not be a bad idea, is to have maybe Greg Rattray or someone from the security team brief our working group on what that model is, because, you know, it just so happens that they use it at the registry level, but it's not to say that maybe something like that might not be appropriate on the registrar level as well. It's just that that's the way that it was implemented. And James, I don't know if you're familiar with any of this at all, but that's my understanding.
And this is Marika. I'm happy to look into that, but I will first check as well with Greg, because he actually just posted to the list that he and Rod will be wanting to comment on this in relation to the malware wiki. So I think he probably has some more knowledge on this as well, as he's been involved, I think, in the Conficker issue. So I can check with him if he would like to have someone on the next call, and then I can check if there's someone that's willing and available to provide an overview of this new process.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, you know, I would certainly defer to Greg, our chair, in terms of whether he wants to put an actual conversation about this on the next call, but it's at least something to consider in our options that as a model.
Yeah, and I think the beauty of that approach, at least from the registry side, was, you know, they didn't want to go through the nuances of worrying whether it breached an ICANN agreement or not. And so this was a way of saying, look, you know, we'll do this because it's the right thing for the community, and you know, because ICANN where and wants this to be, you know, happening, that it's, you know, the registries don't have to worry about some sort of, you know, breach. And it may not have been a breach, but I'm just saying, you know, saying I think it was this, more of an insurance that everything was okay from a contractual standpoint with ICANN.
Yeah, this is the example of getting permission first rather than begging for forgiveness later.
Yeah. And of course, the issue here is that we have to also be a little bit careful that we don't set up something that can be abused. But the model's intriguing to me because it's very nonspecific in terms of the abuse. No, I mean, unless I misinterpreted it. And that might be a way for us to proceed in terms of sort of part A of your original suggestion, James, which is there ought to be something, and then part B about specifics, well, we don't know yet. The way to hedge that is to use a model like that one.
Yeah, this is James again. I like that because it also addresses one of the questions I raised earlier, which is, you know, the current environment is that there is no uniformity. We've discovered that. But we also understand that whatever registrars do to protect themselves from abuse, they have to consistently apply their own internal anti-abuse policies and procedures. Now, the second that becomes external to them, you know, if it's coming from ICANN, for example, then, you know, registrars are going to say, of course, very similar to what the registry said in this particular model, is that we cannot be held liable for any harm that may arise from us executing an ICANN-mandated abuse policy. And
yep.
I think that's something that I've raised before, but I think it bears repeating because it is an important consideration as we continue our work, is that right now registrars are much more, I'm speaking, of course, of the registrars that are actively participating in policy development and are taking a proactive approach to abuse, is that you know, we recognize that unlike registries, we don't have that type of protection. But we have to be very, very careful.
And you know, has that type of protection been exercised yet? You know, where, you know, have we seen any cases where, you know, somebody was taken down as a result of this model, and that there was already a suit filed against the registry for doing it, for the harm that it caused, or?
Are you talking specifically of the...
But the
I guess I'm not following.
Well, in terms of the Conficker stuff, right, Barry?
Yes, yes.
Margie, Marika, any of you folks twigged any of that? The person I would immediately think to ask would be Greg Aaron, if anybody's going to know.
Yeah, I'm not familiar.
Yeah, I mean, because I would agree, I would have to agree with you, James. You know, marching down that road, there has to be a good degree of indemnification to protect you guys in that regard. But, you know, again, it's kind of one of those things, how often does a takedown of a domain actually result in legitimate harm versus going after the bad guys, I guess. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't think it's necessarily a question of keeping score. I think that, you know, some registrars, if they get a false positive even on one domain, you know, it could it could result in harm to them in terms of a lawsuit that could really disrupt their business. So, in some respects, I'm going to struggle for a bad analogy here, but it's like preventing a terrorist attack or birth control method is you're guarding against, you're shooting for 100% coverage because that 1% would be disruptive,
right?
Yeah, this is something that the Fast Flux gang got into pretty deep. Where did you guys wind up on that, James and Marika? I guess you guys lived through the end of that.
Yeah, it's probably something we could talk about offline. I know our time's pretty short here, but...
Well, I'm just thinking in terms of whether there's something out of that that informs this discussion.
Unfortunately, we ended up with a lot of compromise recommendations as opposed to any policy. That'll probably be the way to leave it.
Maybe even backing away from that. Maybe let's step back to where we're at. So we're saying, yep, there's not uniformity. Two, it might be a good idea to have registrars forcing their own abuse policies. C, there may be need for some specifics after the working group is deeper into its work. And D, there's a model to explore with the registry agreement that was just struck as a possible rapid response to abuse. And E, explore the possibility of indemnifying registrars in the event of using such a model. That's, I think, where we're at the moment.
Well, and I think, Mike, if I can modify your E there to say that, you know, I really don't see how you can mandate without indemnifying and vice versa.
Yeah.
I really feel that the two are linked, and that, anything where we would say registrars are responsible for doing X, but if any harm results from X, even on one occasion, the registrar bears the burden of that. I think that...
Ooh, I like that deal.
Yeah.
James,
I don't know anybody who would really sign on for something like that.
You're no.
So, James, does this go back to, I think you had mentioned it previously about making the registrars the cops, so to speak, in terms of trying to combat the abuse?
Well, I'm not sure what the context of that statement was, Barry, possibly. I'm trusting my memory a little bit, but I think that's correct a little bit. I mean, if we are saying that ICANN is going to hand registrars a recipe for combating abuse, then anything that results from the proper application of that recipe or that policy has to indemnify the registrar. And I would really be more comfortable if, like, a legal mind like Margie weighed in on what I'm saying here, or maybe gave me some better language to put around this thought.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple ways to look at it. I know on the IRT kind of work that they did, one of the things that they built into their model was if someone is requesting a suspension, that they have to indemnify for that. So that's not unusual to come up with that sort of approach. If you look at the ICANN contracts right now, in the ICANN contract, the registrar accreditation agreement, it has language that has to go into the registrant agreement. So the contract has a provision that says that your registrant your agreement has to have certain provisions. And one of them is an indemnification of the registry. So the registry gets indemnification from the registrant in the current RAA, but it's silent as to the registrar. I guess in the past the theory was that if the registrar needed indemnification, they could certainly ask for it because they control the document that they have their registrant sign, but that is one area where it might be beefed up if that's where, you know, the group, you know, if that's appropriate, and certainly, you know, there's someone has a risk on false positive, so that's certainly an issue to discuss.
Right, and I think that the current things that we have to make sure registrants agree to are consensus policies, and mostly it revolves around UDRP.
Right. Yeah. So, to kind of extend my question is, like, in the case of taking down acme.com because it's been identified as a phishing site, as an example, and let's just hypothetically, and Registrar X holds that domain name, the only way that they would ever take down acme.com is if they got a request as a result of a UDRP or some other legal action that forced them to do that. But would Registrar X ever actually police it themselves? As an example, Registrar X found out that acme.com was a phishing site. Would Registrar X take it upon themselves to go ahead and take that down without a request from anybody else? And where I'm getting at is, you know, we have this language that's in these registrant agreements that either gives the indemnification or says that, you know, we can take down a domain name for the following reasons. It really, and correct me if I'm wrong, but realistic state is the fact that no domain name is really going to be taken down without a formal request from somebody else against a registrar. So the purpose of that language in the contract is really only to just protect the registrar from being sued by the registrant, period, right? It doesn't, the language in the contract itself is really a protection measure. It's not a measure against combating abuse. Did that make sense?
Yeah, I think I lost the second half of your question, but the first half of your question is that we, and I can't speak for other registrars, but we are very active in detecting, you know, what is going on in the names that we manage, and taking action without prompting from any outside party. I think that where we get a little uncomfortable is if we start discussing that becomes a requirement, because then that raises the question of what happens when we miss one, or what happens when we have a false positive, like you said. And I think that's areas, and I'm certainly not a member of our legal team, but I mean, that's areas, I think those are questions that they would probably, require a greater degree of protection than we currently have now.
So I'm sorry to kind of steal this, but I'm just trying to understand what's going on. So in today's world, if GoDaddy were to stumble across a site that was a, malware phishing site or whatever that you guys would go ahead and take it upon yourselves to take that domain name down. What in the process, how do you notify, ICANN, or do you, and if this is intellectual property, you don't have to answer it. I'm just kind of curious, you know, is there a formal process for you to police up that activity and inform the community, or do you just kind of take it on yourself?
I think, you know, I certainly can't make any blanket statements because I just don't know, but I think that we would take that upon ourselves. And, you know, in some cases, for example, if we detected, I think I brought this up in previous conversations, maybe not this particular PDP, but if we detect something that is, you know, a little fishy, and I don't say that with a PH, I mean something that is questionable, and we don't feel maybe perhaps that we have the grounds to take action under our registration agreement, there are other agreements that we can operate under. For example, if the name is hosted with us, we can certainly suspend the hosting accounts, for example, because maybe perhaps we feel we have more latitude under that agreement. But there is not, you know, I don't believe there's any requirement or mechanism to notify ICANN when we do that sort of thing.
Okay, I was just curious. Because where my line of questioning is all boiling down to is, you know, me as a person, I'm much more a black or white kind of person. There is no color in between the two, and so that, I guess, that narrow-mindedness, if you will, always forces me to try to envision a perfect state or what the ideal world would be. Whether we could get to it or not is a different issue. You know, the closer you try to get to that ideal state, the more expensive it becomes. So, you know, in trying to envision what the perfect world would be, if I look at it in this regard, to every registrar out there, all 900 of them, they all had their registrant agreements posted on their website, and they all had a minimum baseline of language that discusses abuse. So what would the outcome of that be? What would the world be like if that perfect state were enabled? And granted, I may have missed pieces of vision of what that perfect state would be, but I think you might hopefully get where I'm coming from. You know, what is it by us that we go down this road?
Well, if I could just jump in, this is James again. One thought would be that assumes that registrars are essentially like GoDaddy. They're selling registrations online to retail customers. And, you know, I think that's a generalization that may not, you know, that may on the boundary cases not hold up. If that made any sense.
It does. All right, well, so then that begs the question is, if we looked at any kind of minimum baseline, then that baseline we need to create for commercial sellers versus the other types of registrars that are out there, then.
Yes. Right, and it's not an either-or proposition. It would have to be kind of a one-size-fits-all for not only the business models that we know that are in existence now, but also future business models that, you know, could be anticipated. So much so that my recommendation might be something to the effect of, you know, per ICANN's request, you are able to demonstrate that you are entering into registration agreements with your customers that gives you sufficient latitude to address abuse. What those are specifically, and whether you display them, you know, via snail mail or carrier pigeon, or if you make them click through it on a website, it's kind of left to that registrar's discretion. You know, so that it fits with their business model. But we want to avoid any situation where we're inserting ICANN into the registrar-customer relationship because, one, because that's a you know, kind of steps all over one of ICANN's core missions, but two, that's also just becomes a nightmare in terms of compliance.
Right, right. Yeah, I'd agree. I don't know. I'll get off my question box for now, but
I hope I'm helping.
Oh, no, you're helping me. I'm still just having that harder, I'm struggling to try to come up with that picture. Mikey, any comments on any of this?
I think it might be worthwhile to take a listen to this part of the MP3 and formulate a series of questions for the larger group. Because I think we're getting pretty close to the nub of the issue, and I'm thinking that we could take advantage of the wisdom of the broader group to help us with this.
I
thought that last 15 minutes on the phone, especially sort of the conversation between the two of you and Margie, was pretty productive and flushed out, I think, a couple of dilemmas in the dictionary definition of the term, where there is no right answer, and it would be good to understand those dilemmas better and then take that understanding to the larger group in the form of questions. That's about where I'm at.
And Barry, this is James. I should mention that, you know, when I'm on these calls, I have to struggle as well because I'm very familiar with GoDaddy's business model, which I have to continuously remind myself is not, you know, it's not universal. So,
right.
You know, I have the same issue, is that I know what we do and I know how we do it, but then I know that, well, you know, Margie's former company, for example, may have a completely different take on something like that. So when we say registrars, we have to be very cognizant of the fact that we're talking about we're talking about a spectrum of businesses engaged in a lot of different types of industries.
So let me try something out, and that is, if we take that spectrum idea one step further, I'm not sure that we necessarily do this, but the group does, and we say, okay, there are the following sort of broad clumps of types of registrars, and we'd have to come up with more dignified language than this, but, you know, there's the teeny tiny mom and pop, and there's the sort of registrar as, oh, by the way, ancillary business line on some other kind of business, and then there's the registrar as our primary business type registrar like GoDaddy or Network Solutions. So, you know, it's sort of the market stratification thing. And then having come up with those clumps, come up with suggestions or guidelines or recommendations, something that doesn't have the force of policy, but that's useful for the people who are running those respective kinds of businesses to think about in the way that they structure their agreements with their customers, more in the advisory sense. Because, you know, I'm thinking back to the days when I was an in-the-basement mom-and-pop ISP, and if I had been thinking about it, I would have been a registrar as well. I wasn't, but, you know, if I had been, the registrar part of the business would have been a very minor part of the deal. And if somebody had plopped out there suggested language for my agreement with registrants and suggested avenues to combat abuse, I'd have stapled those right in, probably without even checking with the lawyer, because I just didn't have the resources to think about that, and I, you know, I probably didn't have the business volume to support a staff. So my tiny little business perspective would have been much different than that of GoDaddy, where it's a great big business and that's their primary focus, and I would probably look to GoDaddy for ideas as to what are good things to look out for, what are good things to have in the agreement, and I would cheerfully steal them.
I like that approach because, you know, it's getting something out there that's the right thing to do without enforcing or forcing the hand. My only question about that is I thought that Rodenbaugh had mentioned, and I realize this is a pre-PDP and not a formal PDP, but I thought he had mentioned that typically the outcomes were never, ICANN never really publishes best practices. It's either updates to the RAA or an actual policy development, correct?
Yeah,
so,
but, you know, I think
This is, Marika, if I can just make one point, because coming back to one of the Fast Flux recommendations is actually for ICANN to explore the possibility to serve as a best practices facilitator. So, I mean, there's no clear model yet, but there has been discussion in that context of maybe trying to see if there are no policy options or consensus the group can come up with, maybe that's another alternative that can be explored. So, you know, there can be creative thinking as well around, you know, what could be potential outcomes of any policy development process.
Okay, cool. You know, and that really sparked a question. Back in my IBM days, across all the different market verticals and everything, they established what they call centers of competence around a specific technology or a service. Is there anything like that in the industry today, like for registrars and registries, or is it more or less just ICANN or anything along those lines?
Barry, do you mean external groups or other venues outside of ICANN that registries and registrars and other interested parties could... I'm trying to understand what a center of competence does or means.
Well, it's typically a center of competence. I have seen some models external as well, but generally it was representatives across a specific technology that understood what the best practices are for that technology or service. And they were kind of like an association, so to speak, but it was where everybody within the company or clients or customers could gain access to the center of competence so that they understand what, you know, you could come to the center of competence for example, like templates for what contracts should look like in delivering that service. You would come to them to understand best practices around customer service components in delivering that service, best practices around the technologies to deliver that service and how they should be supported and set up and the architecture behind it, et cetera. That's kind of where I was going. I'm just curious if there's something like that across the marketplace for registrars.
There are a couple. The two that pop into my mind immediately, one is the APWG, the Anti-Phishing Working Group, which it's topic-specific, but it does somewhat focus on that particular subject and how registries and registrars and ISPs, so that, you know, folks that are under contract with ICANN and entities that are ISPs, for example, being a classic example of an entity that can play a role in abuse mitigation but doesn't have any, obligation to ICANN policies. And then the second one being the RISG, which is a Registry Internet Safety Group, which also focuses on abuse and phishing just a wider topic of abuse and how registries, registrars, security companies, and law enforcement can collaborate to address those outside of an ICANN policy arena. So I don't know if those two fit the description of what you were looking for, but those are the two that popped into my head when you were describing Center of Competence.
James, this is Mikey. Do those groups, if you took APWG just for a second, and you married that up with Barry's Center of Competence idea, where that could be a place where a registrar could go look for sample language, sample practices, sample methods to detect fraud, blah, blah, blah. Does that fit within what the APWG does, or do we need to beef them up a little bit with a broader mandate, like perhaps what Marika was referring to?
That is, for the most part, that is what I believe they do. They share best practices. They develop ways to collaborate. And in some respects, these trade associations could even share data. And I know that's a scary concept, but the idea being that if someone is a spammer or distributing malware, and they feel that the best way to avoid detection is to set up accounts at multiple providers, that response or that takedown or mitigation can be coordinated across multiple providers.
Well, this fits in pretty snugly with an idea that I was very keen on when I was part of the Fast Flux Working Group, which is that ICANN takes a convening role and a leadership role rather than a policy role or an operational delivery role. How do the others on the call, and I include Marika, Glenn, Margie in this question, because you all have sat through a lot of this and have opinions too. Is that the kind of direction that we would want to take back to the group? It's certainly one that appeals to me.
This is James. I'll wait my turn, but I do have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I can respond to that, because in some ways we're starting to do that since through, we call it the Abuse of DNS Forum that we did in Mexico City, did another in Sydney, and now have one for Seoul, where we try to bring together, different affected parties to talk about some of the issues. So that's, and some of it is just not within scope of what ICANN policy can address, but because you've got all these different stakeholders and interests that actually attend ICANN meetings, it's a natural place to facilitate some of that discussion.
Is that the sort of thing that ICANN, if one of the recommendations that we came up with was to turn back to ICANN, the organization, and suggest some sort of mandate with an accountability to be a convener, that's something that ICANN would be comfortable with, and James, would you be comfortable handing that sort of a mandate to ICANN?
Yeah, I think I can answer that pretty comfortably and say we would probably not be behind that sort of a change.
How could we get to Barry's, the center of competence notion is really the one that underlies my enthusiasm. I don't really care who the convener is.
Yeah. Mikey, if I could jump in here for just a second. I mean, we would be, I think, just in the general case, a little nervous about having a group with, broad policy and contractual enforcement capabilities, wading into that area a little bit.
So you mean ICANN in that context?
Yeah, because that is a pretty, that's expanding scope a little bit, and it's going beyond, I think. I'm not saying I'm not saying it's a showstopper. I'm saying it's something that we would be very, very nervous about and would not want to just say, hey, this is a good idea, let's go do that. But I think that everyone agrees that we need some, from Fast Flux particularly, but just in general, we need to start looking at mechanisms, tools, or forums to address these types of issues beyond ICANN and beyond ICANN policy, and for a couple reasons. One is that, it's not really necessarily appropriate and it represents mission creep for ICANN. But two is that we can only stop a portion of those types of abuses. I mentioned earlier that ISPs are completely outside of the ICANN umbrella. So if you have an ISP that decides that they want to be a safe haven for bad actors, hypothetically, then, suddenly you find that registries and registrars and ICANN contracted policies are hamstrung by trying to go after those folks. So there's just a lot of I think that there's we're starting to run into limitations of what can and should be done through ICANN. So then that raises the question, well, where should these things be done? And I think that, right. You know, the APWG is a good model. The Center of Competencies is a good example that can be built upon. The RISG is an interesting approach. But, you know, registries and registrars policing their own, having the discretion and the latitude in their own agreements with ICANN to do the right thing on their own and with other affected parties that may not be involved in ICANN, like ISPs, law enforcement, et cetera.
See, I think we're close to agreement. I don't necessarily have my hat hung on the notion that ICANN ought to be the place. What I'm intrigued with, though, is some neutral ground where the people who are engaged in all this can get together and figure things out and teach the young ones. I mean, basically, what I think, this isn't something I've ever said in the working group, but I would bet a nickel that most of the abuse is taking place in unsophisticated registrars who just don't know how to combat it. Yes, there are probably some black hat registrars, and those represent a different case, but I'll bet that a lot of this is just bad actors shopping for a weak link in the chain, and once they find one, they exploit it. And if we can figure out a way to help those weak links be better,
we can go
a long way towards addressing the issue.
This is Barry. Mikey, I would have to agree to that. Kind of the opposite to my perfect world picture of what the perfect world would look like is the opposite question is, okay, we recognize there's a problem. We see the reports about it. Where are the gaps out there? And then, you know, what things are we going to do to address the gaps? And so will a blanket minimum baseline still address the gaps that are out there? And especially now that we have the caveat, which is going to be a to-do for you, James, here in a second, is, you know, do we have these different business types within the registrar community, which, you know, I was kind of familiar with two of them, but it sounds like there's five or six or seven different types. So that just muddies the water even more in terms of trying to gain a clear picture on how we address the gap. So I do think it's intriguing about you know, this realm of COC best practices kind of thing. I think we definitely hit a speed bump that if that's what we had agreed upon as a recommendation, that for now in terms of Part A versus Part B, but, you know, if we move forward with just recommendations, I think the speed bump itself is how would we get them out to be used and accepted by the community, et cetera. So I guess for the most part, I'd kind of like to table this part where we only got about 4 or 5 minutes left, and I want to talk through a couple of items. Just a couple of quick to-dos. James, if you could just jot down on a quick list of what you think the different types of businesses are within the 900 registrars are, so we kind of get an idea of what those buckets are. That would be very helpful for at least me. I'd like to understand that, and I think that would certainly be beneficial for any other data or metrics we might try to pull out of some of the other stuff.
I would be glad to do that so long as it's not viewed as being an authoritative or an exclusive or comprehensive list. I'm sure there are plenty out there that I don't understand or, you know, I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm not being seen as having some special insight into this area.
Well, James, you know, one of the things you might want to do, and this you can decide whether to do this or not, but you might check with your marketing folks because I'll bet somewhere they've segmented your competition.
They have, but I think that if they determine that they're not in, if they're not a competitor, for example, if someone has set up a registrar just because they have a very large portfolio and they want to manage that as a registrar,
yeah,
you know, that that would probably be off the table as far as a competitor. But yeah, I will put a list together, Barry.
Okay, cool, and we can add to it and stuff. And Marika, I've got a small to-do for you. You had mentioned this aspect about like the best practices coming out of the fast flux and how ICANN is maybe going to start trying to embrace those or how to work with them. If you could help me, if you got any links to some of that material other than just like the fast flux PDP, but discussion about that, that would be very helpful. I'd like to try to learn a little bit more about that as well.
Yeah, I'm afraid there's not much there yet. I can forward you the recommendations that are in the FastFlux report, but the next step, which should be undertaken shortly once we get through some of the other items of work the GNSO Council has on this list, is to actually form a new draft team to look at those different recommendations, prioritize those, and then see how to move forward with those, because you know, all of those recommendations will require further work and discussion by the community. So that at this stage, there's very little meat around that issue. But I'm happy to forward you what is there.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you. All right. A couple of other quick items to talk about, and we won't get into the details of them. We'll save it for the next call. But basically, Greg had sent out an email outlining kind of short-term actions. And I believe a large extent that we were talking about this today, but in a nutshell, he just, you know, since there's no uniformity, is what does it mean, and that our next task is to understand if registration abuses are occurring that might be curtailed or better addressed if there was more uniformity. You know, that's the basis for our sub-team's charter, so definitely always keep that in mind. One of the items listed under that is I will incorporate Rod Rasmussen's comments about one of the questions we have is, you know, how does uniformity affect registrars, registries, registrants? He also said law enforcement, first responders, and victims. And certainly he had a lot to talk about in terms of the other data elements that could be daunting and scary. Greg's other comment was from the longer term, is basically the data that we've collected so far. I think the question's still on the table whether we really want to go down the road of publishing this formally as an outcome of the RAP or not, because if we do decide to march down that road, there's definitely, I think, a lot more extensive work ahead that may or may not necessarily be of overall value. And the two primary components to that is first refining our materials about how to read the data and those kinds of things, but secondly to what James has mentioned several times is, you know, even giving the registrars to the opportunity to fill in the blanks, so to speak. You know, that's definitely going to require us a lot of effort to overcome there. Any comments around short-term, long-term stuff before we wrap up?
No, yeah, well, Mikey, I've got some opinions about all that stuff, but I think we'll wait till the next call, because once I launch them, I think we'll go on for 20 minutes again.
Yeah, I'll definitely carry those two items over into the next call, because I've definitely got some questions about some of the materials as well. So the last item basically is our next meeting. I will be out of office, fortunately, from the 8th through the 18th and returning on the 19th. So we typically have our sub-team call every other week opposite to the RAP working group. But the 19th of October is the week of the ICANN meetings. Do we still want to hold the call on the 19th, or should we defer until after the ICANN meetings? What's the group feel?
Barry, this is James. Just a little, you know, what seems to be the pattern now for me at ICANN meetings is, you know, the day starts about 6 a.m. with breakfast meetings, and winds up around midnight. So I may be able to find some time here or there, but I will say that ICANN meetings, unless, you know, it's absolutely necessary for us to schedule a call overlapping that, anything we can do to relax that or relief, put some relief into that schedule would be much appreciated.
Yeah, this is Mikey. I'm not going to this one, but I know that Marika and Glenn and everybody's going to be just swamped. So I'd say we punt this one, this is the 19th slot for sure. Because the meeting starts the weekend before the 19th, right, guys?
Correct.
Yeah. No. By that time, it'll be madness.
Or no, the meetings start on the 22nd. Typically, we had our calls on like Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. That certainly would conflict with the start of ICANN, so I don't even want to go down that territory. If we had a call at all, it would be the 19th. But again, that's where people are starting to gear up for travel and stuff. So I don't have any problem with postponing. So I think that the week after ICANN, because we do have an RAP call then. So I'll either target the week of November 2nd, the week of November 9th for the next U of C call. That should give us plenty of time between now and then to get through the ICANN meetings. Is that acceptable?
I think that the next full work group meeting's on the 9th, if I'm not mistaken. So
I think that's correct, because I think normally we don't schedule meetings directly in the week after an ICANN meeting, because often people are still traveling or taking time off. And I think Greg indicated that he would like to start again as well, the 9th, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, perfect. So how about I target for November 4th, 5th, or 6th, somewhere in there, and then we can come back together before that 9th RAP call.
Are you James and crew, are you all going to be home by
November 4th? I should be home by November 2nd or 3rd, and then whether my body clock will be back to normal, it's a separate story. But I did want to mention that ICANN meetings, just for future purposes, typically begin the weekend before and in some cases stretch to the weekend after, just because there's so much going on. So the official schedule is only part of the story. And then the second part is, and I've got to drop off here, so I just wanted to get this out here, is that I thought that from our last call with the main group, there were some other folks who were interested in joining this UOC effort, and just want to make sure that for wherever we decide or schedule our next meeting to be, that we reach out to those folks and make sure that they are aware that we're still anxiously awaiting their participation. So
they just have so much confidence in us, James.
I was not aware that their people asked to be on. Did I miss that on the call, I guess?
Yeah, I'm not sure that was the one, James. I thought that
okay.
The one that was expanding was the phishing malware.
Okay, fair enough, and I may have gotten that wrong, but I do have to drop off now, folks, so I will watch the list for our next scheduling opportunity.
Great. Thank you, everyone, and I'll talk to you soon. I'll send out the calendar invites and stuff.
Barry, just a note, Marika, I won't be able to make that week, but I'm sure Margie or someone else from staff will otherwise be able to cover.
All right, great. All right, well, thank you, everyone, and take care, and I'll talk to you next week then.
Thanks, Barry.
Actually, I'll be out of pocket for a week or so. So, thank
you. It's fun, whatever it is.
Hawaii.
Yeah, that sounds fun. That sounds
Have
a lot
fun.
Better than snow. That's what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, it's my first time. Going to go do some surfing out there and check out Maui.
Oh, cool. Hey, you're halfway to Seoul. You might as well just keep going.
I thought about that, but unfortunately I couldn't swing it. So.
Oh, well. Well, thanks. Great job.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Sandy?
Yes.
Thank you very much for being on the call. Can you disconnect?
Yep, I will stop the recording.
Thank you very much.